Hi, I'm Catherine Marr, President and CEO of NPR. A big thank you to our listeners and supporters. Your generosity keeps WSHU strong, especially as we cover critical events like the upcoming election. Because of your support, we can provide the trusted, in-depth election coverage you rely on. Your contributions ensure that WSHU remains your go-to source for reliable, thoughtful reporting. Thank you for being an essential part of our community and for making all this possible.
A brush fire in Berlin, Connecticut, has burned around 125 acres as of this morning. Michael Kronick is a fire control officer with the State Department of Energy and Environmental Protection.
It's going to be a long haul. It's my understanding there's no rain in the 10-day forecast, and the long-range forecast also shows no rain. This is the beginning days of probably a long fall fire season in the state of Connecticut.
The fire has been burning since Monday, and officials say it could take a month to contain it. Last night, a Weathersfield firefighter died in a utility task vehicle crash while working to put out the blaze. 66-year-old Robert Sharkovich was one of four firefighters riding a UTV when it rolled over. You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news and culture update from the Long Island Sound region. Officials break ground on the next phase of the Ronkonkoma Hub. Governor Lamont calls for an independent monitor for Prospect Medical's Connecticut hospitals. There's some good news for the critically endangered right whales, plus a conversation with the former U.S. ambassador to Russia. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Officials in Suffolk County celebrated two milestones this week in the massive revitalization project at the Ronkonkoma Railroad Station. WSHU's Desiree Diorio has more.
Officials announced partial completion of the massive redevelopment project next to the LIRR. That includes office and retail space, plus rental housing. They also broke ground on the next construction phase, which will add more housing units. Suffolk County Executive Ed Romaine says the project will counteract the brain drain by attracting Long Islanders who would otherwise move away.
This is a visionary of what Long Island and transit-oriented development should look like.
Station Yards, also known as the Ronkonkoma Hub, spans 53 acres and will cost over $1 billion. Officials say the next construction phase will be done in 2026. Desiree Diorio, WSHU News.
Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont wants to ensure patients are not affected by the legal wrangling holding up Yale New Haven Health's purchase of three hospitals owned by a private healthcare company. WSHU's Ebong Udama has more.
Lamont says he's concerned that cash flow problems at Waterbury, Rockville General, and Manchester Memorial Hospitals, owned by Prospect Medical Holdings, will affect patient care. That's why an independent monitor is needed to help the State Department of Public Health ensure patient safety.
We submitted to Prospect just last week. I want a monitor on board to keep an eye on everything going on in those hospitals, to make sure patient safety is not compromised.
Yale New Haven Health had offered to buy the three hospitals for $435 million. But it sued Prospect, claiming violations of its agreement, including ongoing outstanding taxes, a federal investigation, and Medicare problems in one hospital. Prospect has countersued for the full amount, claiming Yale is intentionally reneging on the deal. Ebon Udama, WSHU News.
The population estimate for critically endangered right whales has gone up slightly, following a trend that began back in 2020. With the new numbers, Eve Zukoff reports scientists are holding out hope for the species' future.
Scientists estimate that in 2023, the most recent year with data, there were 372 North Atlantic right whales, up 5 from the previous year. They couldn't attribute the population increase to any one thing, and said that boat collisions and entanglements in fishing gear continue to threaten the species. But Heather Pettis from the New England Aquarium says she's relieved to see any improvement.
It's not a huge increase, but it's an increase. So it is really important to stay the course, continue to assess risks to the population, and respond with adequate management measures.
Pettis warned researchers know of 9 deaths and 13 injuries among right whales since the end of 2023. That could lower the next annual population estimate. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Eve Zuckoff.
John J. Sullivan is the former U.S. ambassador to Russia who served during Russia's invasion of Ukraine. He recounts his experience in a new book. A conversation with the ambassador is ahead.
Local support for After All Things comes from Hartford Healthcare, the only health system in the Northeast with all its hospitals receiving A grades for safety from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent safety watchdog group. HartfordHealthcare.org.
Voting is underway in the 2024 election, and the economy is a big issue. We want to know how your health care, housing, and family care expenses impact your politics. This is Brian Lehrer of WNYC. Join me and Marketplace's Kimberly Adams for a live national election series, America, Are We Ready? We'll open the phones, hear your stories, and learn from the experts. Join us for America, Are We Ready?
Tonight at 8 on WSHU Public Radio. The MTA might be short over $200 million this year, and that budget gap could balloon to more than $650 million by 2028. That's according to a report from the New York State Comptroller, Tom DiNapoli. He's warning of future losses due to a pause on congestion pricing. If that doesn't get resolved, he says budget gaps could climb as high as $3 billion in 2028. Connecticut's Alcohol Trade Association says a state fee for 50-milliliter liquor bottles has made over $13 million in 3 years. The law gives cities and towns 5 cents for every bottle, commonly known as a nip bottle. The cities and towns are required to use the revenue for environmental efforts like recycling and litter cleanup. Long Island's Gabreski Airport is one of four New York airports to get millions in federal funding from the U.S. Department of Transportation. The state says the funds will finance reconstruction and expansion projects. The airport says they'll use the money to build an air traffic control tower. Former U.S. Ambassador to Russia John J. Sullivan is the author of a memoir about his time in Russia during the lead-up to the invasion of Ukraine. In Midnight in Moscow, a memoir from the front line of Russia's war against the West, Sullivan offers an in-depth look at why Russia views the war in Ukraine as existential. Sullivan recently stopped by Sacred Heart University and WSHU to discuss the book with WSHU News Director Terry Sheridan.
Ambassador, you were appointed by President Trump in 2019. You resigned the position of Deputy Secretary of State to take the lower position of ambassador. You arrived in Moscow in January 2020 at the start of the pandemic, and that brought challenges to an already challenging situation. We come out of the pandemic, and soon afterwards, Russian troops start massing near the Ukrainian border, then the invasion. You knew it wasn't going to be easy, but this had to take a toll on you. You went in with certain expectations, but they were thrown out the window.
Well, that's certainly true, but I loved every minute of it, and it's why I went there. I got more than I bargained for, which was a good thing for me. I left my position, as you note, it is a demotion in the bureaucracy to leaving the number two position in the department to being an ambassador. However, having served as the Deputy Secretary of State and knowing everyone from the Secretary of State on down, and the country to which I was ambassador was Russia. I mean, there are two big posts, Russia and the People's Republic of China. I went there for the challenge, for the opportunity to work on those issues and to stand with and support my colleagues who were already serving there in a very, very challenging environment. So it was tough, but that's what made it attractive to me.
Yeah, but you say that Russians, everything is difficult, even when Americans and Russians have the same, they want to do the same thing.
Right.
But it's not easy. You would think it would just be a handshake or something, but no, it's not.
It's a lesson that American diplomats, Americans generally, need to learn. Russians are different. Russians are different from us. That shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. And their approach to diplomacy, to doing business with us, to life, we see this today in the war that Putin, the aggressive war Putin has started against Ukraine. He's emphasizing the differences between Russia and the West. I learned of them. Some of them I celebrate. They're pretty good, nice hockey. We can talk about that.
We will.
They have a different systems for developing players and styles of play. Some of the differences are good and what makes the world such a beautiful and diverse place. Some of them are bad, and a few of them are really evil.
Now, talking about Russian President Vladimir Putin, he calls himself a Czechist.
Yes.
Which I didn't know that. You know, mm-hmm. I may have read it, but it didn't make a connection until I read the book. He's a product of the security system and the services. You say it's the most important lens in which to view Vladimir Putin. Because I always was struck how a loyal Soviet KGB officer could transform in the communist system,
right.
could transform into someone in a capitalist system, a kleptocracy, if you will,
right.
and continue to do what he's doing. But that's the lens you need to look at him?
You absolutely do, because it extends back not only through the Soviet system, but to the earliest days of the Russian Empire. The notorious KGB turned into today's FSB, Federal Security Service. But the KGB's roots go back to Ivan the Terrible, and I write about this in the book. This is a mindset, an outlook on this small cabal that protects the Tsar, in the case of Ivan the Terrible and his successors, or the leaders of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, Lenin and his successors, or now Putin himself. And Putin, the KGB, career KGB officer, has now become, in effect, the 21st century czar, although he hates that term as applied to him. He said in an interview once, after he was reelected in March of 2018, he was asked by state media, who thought they were asking him a friendly question, "You've ruled us for so long, you're really like a czar." And he objected. He said, "No, I didn't inherit this. I built this. I earned this. What I do now, I earned. I didn't inherit it from my father." So he's an unusual world leader for American leaders to understand and grapple with. We can't approach him like he's the British prime minister or the Japanese prime minister, or in many ways, even the President Xi, the leader of the People's Republic of China. What we have in the Kremlin today is what the U.S. has faced over centuries, whether it was the Tsar, the leaders of the Communist Party, or now the leader of the Russian Federation, a nationalist Russian who is looking to aggregate power to himself.
Why does Putin think the situation in Ukraine is existential to Russia?
Well, it's existential to his vision of a greater Russian empire. It's not an Ukraine, NATO is not an existential threat. It's not a threat at all to the Russian Federation. It is, however, inconsistent with Putin's idea of what the greater Russia should be. Imagine an American president who said the United States is the preeminent power in North America and we should do away with these boundaries to the north with Canada, and we've got a problematic border in the south with Mexico. We're really one big happy family. My vision is to create a United States of America that includes the Canadian provinces and Mexico. That's basically what Putin has done. Now, he turns to history to rationalize it, that this is part of an ancient, he called the Russian expression is Ruski Mir, Russian world. But that's his vision. And it's a central part of who he is.
John J. Sullivan is the former ambassador to Russia and the author of Midnight in Moscow, a memoir from the front lines of Russia's war against the West. Thank you, Ambassador.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen on the radio, stream at WSHU.org, or download the WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford Healthcare. Guys, the World Series is set to start, and you can be part of the action. WSHU is giving away a pair of seats to Game 4 at Yankee Stadium. That's right, you could be watching the Yankees battle the Dodgers on Tuesday night from behind home plate. Support WSHU by noon on Friday, and you'll be entered to win. Special thanks to FCP Livin' for making this possible. Don't miss your chance. Enter right now at WSHU.org, and good luck. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your day. I'll speak to you tomorrow.